The Tale of the Frozen Pussy, Slipper Trip, The $1 Million Fee. These are just a few of the strange cases and wild tales you will hear on Miami Memoirs. Join Florida attorney Louis Ress as he recounts his 6 decades of legal practice in the wilds of South Florida.
Before the podcast begins, I would like to share with you some exciting news. Louis has released a knockout second title, Miami Memoirs, including The Maharani's Ring. Round 2 from the amazing life and times of legendary South Florida attorney Louis Ress takes readers from Brooklyn in the 1940s, via a spell in a top-secret army department, and a transatlantic solo flight in a replica Spirit of St. Louis, to adventures in and out of the courtroom, in a sometimes rougher-than-ready 50s and 60s Miami. The book is available now on Amazon, just search Louis Ress. And before we start, don't forget to like our Facebook page, Miami Memoirs. And now let's begin.
Hi everyone, and thank you for joining us for Miami Memoirs, Strange Cases and Wild Tales with Louis Ress. I'm Jeanette Garcia, your host. And today we were doing episode 29, Pete Brady and the Lottery. So this is our final story about the lottery, Louis, and it's about a gentleman named Pete Brady. Can you tell us a little bit about who he is?
Right. Who was Pete Brady? Pete Brady was just a humble farmer, old, skinny, wiry. He had very white skin and it was covered with tattoos. Even now, he physically worked with his sons in the field. He was a former Golden Gloves boxing champ. Pete wore an old t-shirt and worn-out jeans with old cowboy boots. He drove an old pickup. Pete Brady was plain-spoken. And when he won the lottery for $20 million, I called him and I said, "Pete, I'm so happy for you. Congratulations."
Wow.
He said, "Louis, you know, everybody's angry with me. You're the only one who congratulated me. My phone has been jumping off the hook with people grousing about how I won the $20
million." Oh, that's a kind of a downer.
Yeah, well, they're jealous. Mm-hmm. I said, "Pete, you paid your dollar. You bought your ticket like everybody else, and you won."
Yeah.
They have nothing to complain about. What are they, you know, complaining about?
That's true. I mean, he's a small-time farmer. You know, he took a risk, bought the ticket. You know, he won it, right?
No, not quite. Not quite.
Okay.
Small-time farmer, my ass. No way. Pete Brady had found his way into buying 2,000 additional acres of land in the city of Parkland.
Wow.
He had already owned the adjacent 2,000 acres.
Whoa.
That would have given him 4,000 acres in the city of Parkland.
That's a lot.
Our group had outbid him, but he had inside connections with the seller, and for reasons best known to them, our offer was ignored, and they sold to Brady. He owned many other properties, and as it turned out, he was the largest single individual landowner in the entire state of Florida.
Wow.
He had his own airstrip. His house was a two-story southern mansion with 6 large white columns, a semicircular driveway, and a dugout fish pond in the front. I don't know if you've ever seen these old plantation-type homes.
Boy,
you sure wouldn't know it just to look at him.
And he didn't seem like it, right? Like, he was just a plain kind of guy. Like, if you saw him, you wouldn't have really, like, pictured him as a rich guy, right?
Right. But he was rich.
And now even more than ever, right?
Right. It was understandable why people were angry. Winning the lottery would have no effect on Pete Brady.
Yeah.
When he won $20 million, he was now worth $220 million.
Exactly. Yeah. So he really didn't need the money, and, you know, he won anyway. Did it change his life at all? I mean...
Well, he didn't go from rags to riches.
Certainly not.
Certainly not. It's a Cinderella story that society expects and drives people to buy the lottery tickets. Mm-hmm. The poor guy suddenly becomes the rich man.
Yeah.
And the guy that's struggling to make his car payments suddenly is driving in a chauffeured Rolls Royce. Well, that's what people expect.
Mm-hmm. And the odds are so crazy.
Right.
For someone to win it. And then... for it to be him.
Right.
What did you learn from Pete Brady and the lottery here?
What do we learn? Well, mm-hmm. It's always, you know, my hero in these stories is Aesop, the Greek philosopher. So there's always a lesson to be learned. And what do we learn? Well, we learn that the amount of money that we accumulate is not often related to our needs. It's like we either have too little or rarely too much. Everybody has different needs. Well, once the basics are covered, then we seek security. Then we look after immediate family, then others. That should be the norm. But that's not what happens. People tend to stop and be uncontrolled when it comes to what they think they need. They need clothes. They need shoes. They need jewelry. They need cars. They need homes. They need servants. They need airplanes. There is no end to materialism. And it is inculcated in us by our society, by salesmen, by advertising, by the values. Work hard. Horatio Alger. I'll tell you more about Horatio Alger. Work hard, struggle, and the poor kid can become the rich man. And the guy living in the big palace on the hill comes from the slums down in the gutter on the wrong side of the tracks. That's the American dream. And this can happen to you if you go and put a dollar down and you have the lucky number and you don't have to work. So this is a, it's, people really also are concerned about power when it comes to money. And they want to be free from being controlled. They want to be independent. Now, there's all kinds of power. Political power is the greatest power, religious and political power. So you get a guy like Putin. Putin controls Russia. And his political power supersedes financial. He's got all these guys under him who are trillionaires, and he's the richest of them all. He's probably the richest man in the world.
Yeah.
And he's got estates that you, well, they're just coming into focus now. They're just being disclosed, but he has enormous estates, and his power equals wealth.
Yeah.
And he controls the really wealthy people in Russia, and who are, and Russia is a very mineral-rich country. It's got oil and gas and minerals. So it's a big, big power factor, and it supersedes money. Also, money in the United States, in our country, becomes a challenge, and it becomes a social thing, becomes behavior. People resent the rich getting richer, and in our country particularly, and in all countries. And they had the French Revolution because of it, and the Russian Revolution. And most revolutions are based on economics. They become richer, and people get angry. And that's why people were angry at Pete Beatty, because he was getting richer and richer. He didn't work to earn it. And the middle class people says, look, we work hard. We're trying to succeed. Why should we give away money? Give it to the rich who don't need it? You should have to have a need for it. Pete Beatty didn't need it. So they want a fairer distribution of the wealth. Also, in the distribution of the wealth, the middle class resents the government giving it to the poor. If you're going to redistribute it, the middle class gets tattooed in the middle. They work hard. They're struggling. They
sandwiched right there in the middle
and
there.
And then they want to take what little they have and share it up with the poor, who they feel are lazy, incompetent, indifferent, not responsible. It's all untrue, but that's how they feel, because they're committed to an ethical behavior. Well, we're talking about the redistribution of the wealth. And I talked to you about the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, the hungry peasants. They were trapped in a society that both the church and the hierarchy, the government, pressed, and they were serfs. They were landless. Some of them were landed. They couldn't make a living. They were tenants, you know, struggling.
Yeah, and a lot of times there's no possibility for upward mobility at all. It's just you're
right.
born into it, you stay like there, and there's no
That's
way.
That's what makes the United States great. We're mm-hmm. one of the few countries in the world where you have an opportunity for upward mobility.
Mm-hmm.
And take a country like England, which is such a great bastion of freedom the base, the fountainhead of our beliefs in democracy. The philosophy of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in England, it's how you're born. And if
yeah.
you are born low, you stay low. It's very hard to break out. And if you're born into aristocracy with titles and genuflection and monarchies
mm-hmm.
and knighthoods and chivalry and flags and stuff and family crests and schooling and estates and ownership of property, an independent income so you don't have to work,
mm-hmm.
That still goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, you want
families...
a French word for it? It stinks. That's the French word. It's terrible. It shouldn't be.
Yeah, no, it's true. And also, if you have wealth for the majority of the time, you're going to continue to get wealthy. It's not like
the wealth
doesn't go away.
I was getting
it's just,
there.
You're just
right.
going to keep getting more power and more wealth.
Right. So during this time, during the stock market was going up when everybody wasn't making a living,
mm-hmm.
the poor people weren't, but the rich people were
kept
accumulating more and more and more money. Some of the stocks went up over 70%
mm-hmm.
in less than a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's an enormous, if you're worth $1 billion, that's a lot of money. And then don't know what to do with all that money. So Elizabeth Warren, you know, the Senator Elizabeth Warren,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and Senator Bernie Sanders, who are liberals,
mm-hmm.
Came up with this idea that we have to redistribute the wealth in the United States,
mm-hmm.
and they came up with these plans. And if you look at the amount of money that they use as a threshold,
mm-hmm.
Where you have to redistribute it at, it's $50 million from what I can see.
$50 million.
Yeah, and if you look at the assets of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, it's about $50 million.
so they fall in there.
I'll bet you.
Right below.
They're very good with other people.
43.5.
Giving away other people's money, but just up to the level of where they have. Then they don't want to give it away. I don't think I'm going to be happy with the results of this podcast. I'm going to get some letters from some Democrats. But Bernie Sanders, from what I'm told, has three homes. He's not exactly a socialist,
mm-hmm.
But I guess he is. He says he is. So can come from estates.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the rich know how to avoid all of that stuff,
exactly.
And I'll talk to you a little bit about that.
Yeah, they'll be able to get away with reporting less than what?
Well, they don't pay income tax. As
mm-hmm.
Mrs. Helmsley said, only peasants pay income tax. So they don't. What
uh-huh.
do they do? They have 50 ways of avoiding it.
Mm-hmm.
They get benefits from a company. They get travel expenses and allowances. They get food allowances. They get automobiles. They get the use of the company apartment. They don't own the apartment. Mr. Trump's CFO, he owned the apartment. They don't get that. The company owns the apartment. They let them live there.
Mm.
And they say they're living there for the benefit of the company. And the company owns the homes in the mountains. And they own everything, the sailboats and the yachts. They're not owned by the individuals. They're owned by the company.
It's for social reasons for my business.
They use it for business reasons. But these people are employees of the company. And they get the use of it. And the same with the jets, with the private jets. Now, what happens in an estate? Let's say you're an enormously wealthy person. I won't give you names, but let's say your family was the first founder of the automobile industry.
Hmm.
Okay, your name is Oldsmobile. I'll pick one that you can put the letters in.
Uh-huh.
You're about to die, and Mr. Oldsmobile owns all this stock in Oldsmobile Corporation, and he's the CEO and the chairman, and he's got all these dividends, and he's got three generations. He's got children and grandchildren. So what he does, and I've got your interest, he takes his stock and he puts it in to the Oldsmobile Family Foundation,
uh-huh.
which is a charity.
Mm.
And now he gets a big deduction for putting it in because it's tax deductible.
Yeah, it's a charity.
So it's a charitable donation. Now Oldsmobile Family Foundation owns the stock. They also control Oldsmobile Family Foundation throughout the generations. Mm. They can have anyone who is an Oldsmobile person can qualify to be on the board of directors and an officer of the Oldsmobile Family Foundation.
How convenient.
Oh, well, they get a salary. It's small. They get pips. What's the point then? Well, the Oldsmobile Family Foundation votes the stock in the Oldsmobile Corporation. And so now you become the CFO and the CEO and everything in the Oldsmobile Corporation forever, for eternity. Mm-hmm. And they control the corporation from eternity, and they never lose control of their corporation. And they can do anything they want with it. They donate to charity. They can donate back to the corporation. They can give themselves trips. They can give themselves salaries. They control it.
Yeah.
And they can, and the dividends go to the foundation, which they can use again for their own purposes. So it's a in perpetuity.
Right.
We used to have what was called the law against perpetuities, which it's a whole thing in law school. I'll talk to you at another time about it.
Yeah, definitely.
But it was to stop these things from going on forever. Mm-hmm. And we've done away with that. Oh. And we've done away with the law of perpetuities, and we've done it pretty much in this country. And we've done away with the limitation of the control of your assets. Hmm. So you have that forever. What other ways does the government raise money? Well, they are user taxes. And user taxes apply to everybody. So the poor and the rich, if you own a car, you're going to pay gasoline tax. Well, whether it's a Chevy or a Ford or a Rolls Royce, but you don't pay that much more for a Rolls Royce than you do for a Chevy. Hmm. So the gasoline tax is a big thing. Sales tax on clothing, sales tax on jewelry and things like that. Going to a hotel, you pay a tremendous tax on the room tax. There's parks. If you want to go in the park, you pay a tax to go into use the park. The poor people that want to go have a barbecue.
Yeah, the park, because they don't have a backyard.
$15 an hour if they're lucky.
Yeah, they don't have a backyard for the barbecue. They got to go pay at the park.
A couple of bottles of Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola and go to the park with some ham sandwiches. They pay the same fee that the rich guy who comes in with the Rolls Royce and the champagne. Entertainment. All those taxes on entertainment. You go to the movies, there's a tax. Mm-hmm. Poor people go to the movies to try to escape.
Yes.
They pay a big tax. So income taxes are only a relatively modest part of the whole tax income. What else can I tell you? Money has become a symbol of success. Mm-hmm. And it really, I can understand it, but accumulating money is the road to happiness in our society, and it isn't. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people get misled and go down a false road, and it's quicksand. It's not. And the upper 1% don't pay their share.
Yeah, that's the truth, yeah.
And I told you about the foundations. Well, do you know anything about corporate? You know about it, I'm sure. Corporations hiding their taxes out of the country and not paying income tax.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes.
Well,
what I'm not too familiar with is the like hedge funds and things like that.
Excuse me?
Hedge funds?
Hedge funds.
And how...
Hedge funds are different.
Mm, okay.
Hedge funds are not tax. The hedge funds are investment schemes. But the tax scheme that they use to avoid taxes is they take the intellectual property of a corporation. This is one of the things. And they assign it to a company. So let's say all the patents and all of the copyrights go into this company. Then the company is established in either Ireland or Holland, some of the countries that have very low income taxes. Then the corporation pays user fees for those franchises, for those intellectual properties, the patents and the copyrights. All the profits are used to pay them for the use of those copyrights. So all the profits are siphoned off from the sales, going back into these corporations that are not paying taxes.
Huh.
So they're making money in the United States, but they're using it to pay corporations that they own outside of the country where the profits are then declared. And they don't bring them back into the United States.
So yeah, it's a loss to our country too.
Well, it's a battle between large corporations and government.
Hmm.
And that battle is in the process of reaching heights now, because about 130 countries are fed up with it.
Yeah.
And they're going to get together and stop the international corporations from refusing to pay taxes.
Good.
So
yeah,
that's
one step forward at least.
That's the offshore situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does that help you?
Yeah.
So a lot of this is not owning the money, but just controlling it.
Mm-hmm.
And that the control is more important than the actual ownership.
Controlling it and knowing how to manipulate it for your
right.
For your interest.
And the 1% in the United States are living very, very comfortably. They made a great deal of money in the stock market the last year and a year and a half in this pandemic. And the rest of the country suffered, and their assets and income went down.
Yes.
So.
And it's also because of the education, too. Like, people aren't educated as far as, like, how the stock market works. And then even if they could invest, during that time people were so afraid, you know, that why would they put their money in the stock market? But that was the moment to put your money in, when the prices were low, and then wait, and you would, you know, make profit
right.
off of it. But so many people are not educated, they don't know. So then they stay, you know, just, you know, they lost their jobs, the situation just gets worse for them instead of better.
Right. Right. And now a lot of the American middle class, particularly the white Protestants, are facing a claim for reparations by everybody else.
Hmm.
The black people want to be paid for what went on in Tulsa,
mm-hmm.
for what went on in other places, which is inexcusable and understandable.
Mm-hmm.
But the poor American worker that's struggling to support his family
mm-hmm.
doesn't feel in a position to want to pay for that.
Mm.
And they feel that they're supporting causes that are not their fault, and they're being punished. So there's a whole thing going on with people being oppressed. The middle class feels oppressed. The poor people want reparations, and they're oppressed. The rich people want more, and they're
mm-hmm.
never satisfied. The large corporations are trying to grab everything they can and get power. So the wealthy resist. They don't want to come forward and pay.
And they can. And the thing with it is, they have so many resources that it's so much easier for them to fight. Whether
right.
it's like lawsuits or whatever the case might be, they have the money, they have the power to be able to go against
right.
whatever gets placed against them.
The
so,
courts and litigation
yeah.
are a rich man's pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
The poor can't afford to go to court, and the attorneys
yeah.
want to be paid, and they want to be part of their clients. They say, I'm smarter than my client,
mm-hmm.
and I'm more hardworking, and I'm nicer. I should have it, and they should be working
mm-hmm.
for me. Why am I being a subling and being subjugated by some rich client, when I should be the rich one and they should be the poorer one?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of resentment.
Yeah.
And of course, the wealthy have other problems, because they have to knuckle under to the politicians who have power.
Hmm.
So it's a...
That's true.
And the
yeah.
poor people have, the only thing they have is the vote. That's they have the revolution. They can do it either by the ballot box or by the gun. But
yeah.
that's what's going on. So this
wow,
is...
Wow, that's quite a chat about Pete Brady. I didn't know we were going to get so deep into all these different layers in our society. But
right, and you talk about the bottom line is, when you talk about democracy, it's not just the number of votes you have. The Republicans don't want the black people to have
yep.
To run to the polls so much. And
make it difficult.
Land
to
and power. You know, we only have two senators for each state. So you take a state like Rhode Island, and you have
Super
the
tiny.
Same representation in the Senate as California or New York.
Yeah.
Think about that.
It doesn't make sense.
And
yeah.
if you ask people, well, how can a democracy, if you're a European and you study American democracy, the Russians did, I was in Russia when we debated this, they say, how can you call yourself democratic when a state like Rhode Island has two senators, and the same as New York and California. That's not that's aristocracy forcing its whim, and then on the public, on the country, and the United States Senate has tremendous power. So it shows you that this is a the landed people are the ones who are running the country. That's how they feel.
Yeah.
So this goes back to Pete Beatty and the rich becoming richer.
Yeah, wow. Thank you. Thanks, Lewis. That was a good one. I learned quite a bit.